This is where we meet, sharing conversations from New Mexico and beyond. I'm Chelsea Reedy, and this show is supported by the National Endowment for the Humanities. Taos Center for the Arts would like to recognize that it operates on the homelands of the Red Willow people of Taos Pueblo. We'd like to honor the ongoing dedication and importance of Native and Indigenous cultures within our community and within the land we live, learn, and exist on. On today's show, we speak to poet and activist Olivia Romo. Romo takes us on a journey about the path that led her to her art, a story of artistic and individual growth, deeply grounded in her cultural heritage and the land she grew up surrounded by. Romo's storytelling comes often in the form of poetry, relating to the cultural heritage of water systems within agricultural communities as part of their current and ancestral ways of life. These water systems, called acequias, are communal waterways that bring spring runoff or river water by ditch to agricultural farms and remain the lifeline for many farming families today. Here's the conversation. There are so many ways to describe the work you do and you and the impact you have on the community and beyond. I'd actually like to start with the word activist. You are described by yourself and others as a farmer, a poet, and a water rights activist. I wonder if you could talk about what being an activist means to you and how you live and how you work.
Absolutely. You know, I was born and raised in Taos, and as a young person, a young Taosenia, I've seen that a lot of our natural resources and our way of life is continuing to be challenged every day. And not just by, you know, political challenges, but also by the environment. And that the environment that we've thrived for hundreds of years is beginning to disappear. So my activism is very much surrounded about how do I continue to strive to represent the acequias and be a voice for our cultural communities and our natural way of life that has been in this valley for many, many years. And for me, I love how you open it with the word activism, because that could be taken in many directions. So for me, my art and my poetry, and that is my form of trying to move people. Because, you know, we can talk about policy change, we can talk about climate adaption, we could talk about all the things that we need to activate, or whatever word, you know, verb you want to use. But for me, it's about inspiring people and moving people's hearts to the issues at hand.
So your poetry, you mingle English and Spanish, and it intertwines the themes of ancestry, identity, spirituality, and as you just mentioned, the culture associated with the acequias and the cultural heritage of water within communities. Now, this makes me think of the phrase, water is life, agua es vida, and how this has become, in a way, a rallying cry and kind of popular. Like, it's easy to say that. And I feel when you actually start thinking about that phrase, there's so many layers of it. And forgive me if this is too far-reaching a question, but I wonder if you can actually describe what that sensation or that experience is like for you in the connection to water in the desert and in that connection to communities that are surviving here. And if you think that's really about being tied to the land or working the land or having family that is kind of connected to and working for the land or in the land, or whether it can be connected to in an intellectual way. I wonder if you have thoughts on that.
Absolutely. I think you're right. There's many avenues about where the water is life comes from. And I think in northern New Mexico, there's this beautiful philosophy that the acequias are like the birth canal, right? The place of emergence and existence in the semi-arid desert here in Nuevo Mexico. And it's also the place where people have gathered in community for generations to share not just food and water, but also wisdom and identity. So absolutely, I mean, it is. I think there is a rally, an awareness about water as life in many Indigenous communities and in the climate movement across the globe. You know, this is our opportunity, I think, to really dig in deep, bring awareness to our young people about where they come from and the legacy of water. I think that's on one side of it. is, you know, the blessings and how water becomes life for us Tausenios. And I think on the philosophy or the intellectual side of water, as you posed, I would say that water is a philosophy. The Tausenios have always shared water, and the acequias have been a form of sharing water to the very last drop. Right, this sentimiento, or this tradición, goes as far back as to the Quran, and where people can, you know, agua para nosotros, para Dios, y para los animalitos, para todos. And we have this, I would say, not just the philosophy of water, but also the governance of water. And the uniqueness, how in northern New Mexico, we were doing the repartamiento. And so in times of climate disturbance as such, I think that the land-based people in Taos and all over New Mexico are being challenged in their philosophy of what sharing water really means and what it means to adapt. And sometimes even that means leveraging technology. Because flood irrigation may be, you know, not the most conservative way of watering our fields anymore. And so water is life in the sense that this is our cultural heritage, our lineage, our celebration, but also is a philosophy and governance that is continuing to shift and change every day.
So obviously, some of your poems, many of them deal with describing the challenges that are faced by acequia communities. And I wonder if you might share, one, like how these challenges became apparent to you as a person, like coming up. And if there was maybe it wasn't a moment, but if there was a period of time where you can think about actually choosing to engage and be an activist and use poetry in your activism. Now, maybe it just kind of naturally was like that. Maybe there wasn't like a choice, or there wasn't a significant period of time. But if there was, I wonder if you'd be open to describing that.
I'll actually lean in a little bit, and it's a very personal story, and it's a very difficult one. And the truth is, the matter is, and I think many young people have this experience, and I'm learning to have the courage to really talk about it. You know, but growing up, you know, I grew up on the Acequia del Monte de Rio Chiquito, and I remember all of my comadritas, all the young daughters of the grandparents and the people who ran the ditch there in ranchos. We would actually all go dig and, you know, sacar la acequia together, and it was a very beautiful experience. And I remember my tía and tío lived right next to each other. That's how we all grew up that way. But like many families in northern New Mexico, my family had many disputes and fought over the land. And once grandma and grandpa passed away, you know, aunts and uncles sold off tracts of land. And so I was one of those young people that didn't inherit land on the acequia. And I actually don't live in Taos right now. You know, my experience is that I was completely displaced from something that I was incredibly in love with, that gave me my sense of belonging, right? My querencia, my roots, my ethics. And so when I left Taos, because I had to, I figured, okay, well, I'm not going to grow corn and move cattle the rest of my life or whatever it may be, right? Grow my animalitos and make my living here. But I'm going to have to go explore elsewhere and figure out how I come back home, make a way, make a pathway where I can spiral back to the community that I dearly love and where I still have family for the most part. So my advocacy and my self-determination for my cultura and for this way of life came from a place of losing. So when I moved into the cities, when I moved into Albuquerque and into Santa Fe, I saw that there was a lot of strong rural communities who were trying to let the urban population know, like, look, you know, our water's at risk. These are the things that we're passionate about. We don't want to see any further development because there's not any more water. Well, you know, alongside that, while I was getting my education and getting involved with some farming organizations and nonprofit work, you know, I farmed in the South Valley of Albuquerque while I lived there. So I continued a lot of my practices, but in a very urban setting. And then I just kept writing. Right after college, I joined the New Mexico Acequia Association as one of their team members and traveled all around the state advocating for, you know, farmers and ranchers and their water rights, and gave myself the opportunity and the agency to continue being in those communities and to do the work that I love because it was just who I was. And my writing just, you know, accompanied that. So that's really where kind of that came from.
Thank you for sharing that. And do you find your story elsewhere?
I would say absolutely. Yeah. I would say that, you know, I have a lot of friends from local pueblos and from different indigenous communities all over the Southwest. And this is a very common issue. Mm-hmm. It's that young people are forced to leave their rural communities for jobs, for opportunities for education. But it's not all doom and gloom. I want to be clear that part of the Manito experience is that we've had to leave our communities for labor, for work, for other opportunities, while also obtaining our querencia, our love for place, going home, coming back home, and taking our cultural beliefs and practices with us wherever we go. You know, the Manito culture is one of a very transmigrant experience. And I trust that, you know, we will make it work. A lot of young people are being tenant farmers on properties for elders who can't farm anymore. And there is this huge revival and this excitement from the next generation to keep it going and to reclaim this way of life. And so I just want to say that because while, yes, we're fighting for policy change, for laws, for conservation and the protection of our lands, but we're also doing it. The next generation is doing whatever they can to be that bridge. And so I think I'm one of, you know, many, many voices and many, many young people who are doing this work.
Do you feel like there are, let's say, familial lessons or familial traditions or stories that you were told that you came up with that really kind of influenced you as a storyteller through poetry? Do you think, is there a connection there or not?
Oh, absolutely. I've always told people because I think one of my, and you could see it as a blessing or a curse, but I've been called as I've traveled to read nationally, that I'm a regional Northern New Mexican poet, which is cool, right? I mean, yeah. But then that like really puts me in a box and says like, I only talk about these things. But I would say I've never had to go far for inspiration. Growing up, my dad was probably the most incredible storyteller that I ever knew. And would we be shelling corn together outside, he would tell me these beautiful stories of my grandfather, who is a sheep herder. And he moved, you know, a band of 2,000 head from Taos all through the Kit Carson Trail to Wyoming. And none of that's written down. And just these incredible stories of resilience and beauty and being interconnected with land and place. And the craziest characters, right? You want to talk about the locura and some of the heartbreak and the struggle. That all is seeping from many of our community members. Sure. And I've just been able to be at the right place at the right time and have been very inspired by that. But even more so, what's important is, you know, as I've traveled and read my poetry, you know, I attended the National Cowboy Poetry Festival right before COVID hit. And there was, you know, vaqueros and ranchers and farmers from all over. What I learned was we all had the same connection, right? Whether we called it different words or we had different cultures or practices, but it was all the same heart space. It all came from the same love and sweat and dedication. And it was really, really beautiful. So at the same time where, yeah, you know, yeah, I'm a Chicana poet from the North, but there's so many themes and relatedness across land-based cultures across the world that I think can resonate. Even if you don't understand Spanish, even if you don't understand the riddles in the dichos, but you can feel it. And that sentiment comes from the red clay earth that's not discriminatory, that loves us and protects us.
In terms of the stories, I wonder if you feel a difference as you've gotten older. You're not old, but gotten a little older, that have the stories still come in that same way? Or I think about being told stories as a young person, and how now I think of it like how the stories come to me or those environments or situations. Do you sense a shift in that because of getting just older or not? Or is it just different? Or are the stories really rooted in childhood and the coming up years? Or what do you think?
No, I think the problem is that we've lost spaces to tell stories. And it depends where you're living. Because again, you know, if you're living on the acequia and your heart and your work is close to the earth, those stories come with the people you're working side by side with, or at the farmer's market, or, you know, with familia, and that's still very alive. But whereas we used to, in a more community, in a bigger community way, share stories and music and the traditions, that is becoming a contested space. And it doesn't exist as much anymore. And I would say it's a double-edged sword, because with technology, you and I can have this beautiful conversation and we're not sitting together. And the young people have access to stories so much more quickly and resources than our grandparents ever had. And I think it's important that we also take a seat at that table and utilize it, because it could be an exciting way to share stories from across the globe. So whether, yes, there is community gathering spaces that have been taken from us, there is now new community gathering spaces, whether that's in technology or, you know, in different places now. Not so much, you know, like I said, maybe how we used to traditionally, but it's there. You just have to know where to seek. And also sometimes you have to reclaim a space and invite people to tell those stories.
This kind of relates to, I want to ask you about one of your poems, Bendición del Agua. Was this inspired by a specific acequia?
Yes, the acequia del Don Fernando in Llano Quemado.
And there's a couple lines I'm going to pull out and ask you about them, because they relate to what we were talking about, I think. Mayor, and here they are. This is, I think, right from somewhere in the middle of the poem. Mayordomos only respond to water requests made face to face. Technology hides behind ancient rituals. And that piece right there, technology hides behind ancient rituals. I wonder if you can talk a little bit more about what you mean there.
I wrote that poem when I was 15. Looking back, I think then I saw the acequia as a technology too, right? As a conduit, that the traditions superseded that. And of course they do, and they will. But I would say that as I learn more and more, even myself as a farmer, that we're having to actually utilize the technologies to make everything more efficient. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I actually think that it's going to make us stronger and our seeds stronger. You know, I was talking to a compadrito in Dixon who inherited an incredible apple orchard. It's a legacy orchard. And he's talking about how he's going to have to put everything under high tunnels. Like he's going to have to enclose portions of his orchard to ensure that they survive, because the winters are getting more severe and drier, and the beetles and things that are hitting the trees are just devastating a lot of the crops. And so I think now we're being challenged to live in tandem with the changes and adapt in a way. And I think that we're moving in that direction. So that specific line, I would say, I don't know how relevant it is now.
I'm going to say, because of where we are now, and that the image that I felt from it is actually these rituals, these traditions, technology is hiding right behind them, about to peek out and about to come out and come into the realm. And that's kind of how I read it now. That's why I found it kind of interesting, such an interesting visual to put technology kind of behind, not next to or in front of, put it behind as hiding and kind of referencing it's going to peek out, it's going to come out and come around, and this is positive in some ways and probably not positive in other ways, but it's there, right in the wings, yeah. So anyway, I found that was interesting. I wonder if you want to read a poem, any poem of your choice, if you have a thought about it.
I do. I have a few here that I thought that I would bring together. And one that I want to share is a piece that I wrote. It's called the We Are Water Project. And it was a collaborative with Southern Colorado University and the Four Corners region communities, all regarding to the importance of water and water traditions. And it was an exciting project because we got to hear stories from some of the native communities in Arizona and in Utah, and all in their own native language, and talking about why water is life, some of the struggles they see with contamination of their, you know, sacred spaces and their natural resources, and also the exciting narrative and the voice of the young people of this generation and how they are trying to be in both worlds. And so there's some very beautiful projects. You can visit the website, wearewaterstories.com, and check out the website, because there's all these digital narratives and they've been doing these pop-up exhibits in the Four Corners area. So if anybody's interested, they could take a look at that. But this is the poem that I wrote for that project. As a young child, I was told that the spirit of my relatives would visit me in flights of golden swallowtails. Every summer, as I haul wood, I encounter them, dancing between the aspen and along the riverbanks. As I hunt, prone, with my elbow deep in the earth, I am surrounded by lush meadows of red-top grasses and watch them cling to the salvia. They drink the memories of bare mountain milkweed and dream in the rabbit brush. Patron of our crops and medicines, as long as we continue to farm. Trust that the rain will come if we just keep planting. Soy del Valle Sagrado de Taos, but my blood journey commences at the headwaters of the Rio Bravo, trickles from the Costilla Creek, settled along the Rio Lucio, hails from the Canadian, then is freed in Mexico. Las tierras santas son los lugares donde el agua se junta con otras aguas. But you see, my water has never agreed. Como mi familia, I can only manifest its precious flow from my eyes the moment my family emptied my cup in order for a stranger to drink. Mariposa, llévame al tanque, where my family sent 5 piones, 3 donkeys, and 4 horses to help with construction. The ledger for the Acequia del Monte depicts the beautiful history of communal sweat and cooperation to store water in times of drought. ¿Recuerdas que había tanta agua en la acequia que a veces las truchas brincaban los bordos y nadaban entre los campos de alfalfa? There was a time when my family planted fields of corn, squash, and potatoes, their homes built alongside one another. I can hear the small gate rattle in the wind just a few yards to grandma's house, where she was making frijoles and chile colorado. Pero ahora, todas las casas de adobe han caído. Ellos no se juntan, ellos vendieron todo y sus hijos fueron empujados hacia afuera con sueños quebrados. Pero de cada casa caída, todos hacen leña. Somos los hijos de la Llorona, malcriados who tag the walls of the next store that comes into town, breaking and entering, bulldozing our town. Can you hear our cries echoing through jail cells, the mumbles and gasps at the back of the church? We are the haunting wind when swarms of crickets seized our town and shredded our fields, leaving nothing behind and nothing more to pursue. Dicen que me van a quitar las barreras por donde ando. Las barreras me quitarán, pero mi querencia, ¿cuándo? My people have always believed that water could cure anything. Restore our faith, fallow land, and be the path itself for their children to return home. Home is in the smiles of my elders and in the success of my brown sisters. It is in the stories of what once was and will be again. Toma mi agua, toma mi tierra, pero nunca podrás quitarme el espíritu de mi patria. No riego, pero canto de mi herencia. The carcass of a tiger swallowtail rests in a glass oval tower on my altar. I found it dead on my father's doorstep the last time I journeyed home. A relic of my grief and simplicity of the water that gives us life. There is no such thing as death, just the journey of the golden swallowtail seeking the deepest of blue of the water.
Thank you to Olivia Romo for sharing her words and thoughts with us today. Where We Meet comes from Taos Center for the Arts in Taos, New Mexico, and is supported by the National Endowment for the Humanities. Producers include Colette LaBeouf, Chelsea Reedy, Alice Morion, Ariana Cubillos-Vogler, and Joshua Aragon. Research and writing by Jacqueline Paul. Any views, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed in this program do not necessarily represent those of the National Endowment for the Humanities. On Where We Meet, we share conversations from New Mexico and beyond. Thanks for listening. Be well.